This is Ryan.
And this is Wayne.
And this is Kill the Podcast. Kill the...
Kill the podcast.
Kill the podcast.
It's late.
Kill the Rabbit Podcast, episode 12.
Yes, sir.
Episode 12. So if we were running consecutively, we would be at 3 months, but we're not. We are much more than that. Probably six.
Yeah, too many rabbit trails.
Probably six. So, let's see. This week... So the new venture is still going. We had our first partner meeting Monday. I like it. I like the feel. I know one member, the other member I didn't know, but I got to know him. Really cool guy, super humble, very much so like, if you think we should name the product this, then we'll vote on it. Your opinion is very important. So, they're very happy with my technical skills and background, which is exciting. It's nice to get that affirmation.
Yeah, it is.
So, I still can't talk about it. Probably not until we open. It's because I'm under NDA, which I should probably adhere to
online. I think you probably should.
So, it's going well. The one thing that we did discover this week that was somewhat odd is our first competitor, and you know how that, you know what happens then, you'd find, oh no, it's destroyed.
We've been there before.
We can't do anything. But I was like, you know, like I said before, competition is a good sign of a healthy market. And you just need to make sure that you don't have too many of them. Or if you have a lot of them, that most of them suck. So, that's what I discovered. Most of them suck, and they're just copycats of each other. And if you would have asked the developer, what are you doing? He would have been like, well, I just wanted to build an app that did this, and had no, like... It was no bigger than that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, why did you paint your fence? Oh, just because. Like, that's it. Like, there wasn't any other reason, or... So, the one competitor we do have is concerning, but given that we have some things in our back pocket, given other areas of expertise in different industries, I think that we can come up with something that would give them a run for their money. So, in certain partnerships that we're looking at and things like that. So, that's really exciting. So, then, you know, as if I didn't have anything else to do. So I'm speccing that out for a potential. We're looking into filing something for it, like maybe getting a patent on it. So we're looking at talking to a patent attorney. So in order to do that, I need to flesh out a very detailed, or as detailed as possible, architecture of what it will look like. So that's what I'm working on. With the other system, nothing really has happened. I kind of switched gears, and I'm going to be doing something. I'm concentrating on finishing all the pieces so that you have one big loop as opposed to it's 80% done, and now I'm going to complete 100% of that 80%. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm looking at, and it's not 20%. It's not a realistic value of what the remaining work is. It's probably 50%. If not more.
Okay.
So at least I would have a ground level framework to work in. So I've been doing that. And then work's been interesting. So like I'm working on things that are really cool and no one has a clear idea of how to do it.
This is your day job.
Yes. Yes. It's just as hectic as my real life. So, sitting in meetings with people that are like, well, what about this? And you're like, I don't know. I'm trying my best. But, I mean, it's kind of gotten me where I am today. And I think it's kind of off-putting for most people at that level. Not that it's like this amazing level, but... I'm at a point in my career where I have, I learned about this from another podcast I was listening to, a guy named, his name is Dan Locke. He is this guy that came from China, knew no English, and built businesses. And like he talks about, you have a pyramid or you have a triangle of wealth or something. So the first point is having a high value skill, something that someone will pay you money for, a lot of money for. The second is having a like a scalable idea for a business, and then third is like growing it or something like that. But I was like, oh well, I've gotten to the point in my career where I have a high value skill, and how that looks on paper or when you're a kid fantasizing about the high value skill is nothing like it is in reality. So like, it's not that I know all the answers. I'm expected to know all the answers, which some of them you have to fake it till you make it. And even with the people that you're talking to, you're like, you know, I'm faking it, right? And they're like, yes, yes, but it makes me feel better, so keep doing it. It's very strange, right? And when I in those circles, when I'm like, well, I'm not really sure about the solution or the answer, it's just like, huh? How?
Well, you know, it's like,
because I don't know.
It's like when we used to talk about, you know, what you're saying as a kid, your ideas about these things was kind of like being in a bubble where nothing is impacting it. You don't have to deal with people. You mm-hmm. get out into the real world with real world expectations, unrealistic or not, dealing with people with egos.
The egos, I think, are the hardest to deal with. You have people like that you work with.
Mm-hmm.
They just make it, like, you feel like you're not on the same team. You're just like, I'm just trying to get the answer just like everybody else. I'm not trying to have a contest with you.
Well, and you see yourself as well as managers who, you know, the biggest roadblock to getting something done seems to be trying to get people to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to...
Which seems basic.
Yeah. Rather than making the wrong assumption that everyone is going to get together and be excited to be here and we're going to work together, and mm-hmm. if we have a problem, we'll all kind of charge into a huddle and we'll figure out how to fix it and everything else, and that's cartoon land. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
not real world. But.
Well, and it's funny because I'll hear, I don't remember who this was or where this was, I heard a person be like, another person higher than them was asking them, can you give me a status update on this thing? And this other person that he was talking to said, I'll tell you in the meeting. Then, hours later, in the meeting, he says, well, I couldn't figure it out. It's like, hold the press. Was that the update that you were going to give me 4 hours ago?
Wow.
Like, but it's, I feel in certain, I don't even know if it's an industry thing. I think it's just a large corporation thing. Like in the couple of large corporations that I've worked in the past, not really the one that I'm in now, but in the past, it has been similar to that. Like, there's a lot of blame game. There's a lot of, well, I just don't know how to do it. It's like, you're not concerned about getting fired? I'm always concerned about getting fired, and it seems like I'm the only one. Like, everyone else is like, I'll deal with it tomorrow. Or they're like, we have to get this done today. 4:30, where did you go? Well, I had to go eat dinner and go home. But you didn't finish it. I know, it's sad, but
dinner.
I didn't do it. I was like, but I was working till 8 o'clock to do it. Oh, that's great then. That's great. It's just, I don't know. It's a weird, and maybe it's a generational thing. So, I don't know. So work has been an interesting experience. It's kind of hard for me because I'm a very vocal person. And by vocal, I mean I communicate very well. And I communicate what I'm feeling. So if I feel stressed, like at another job, I had a project manager say, when is this going to be done? How long will it take? And I literally, I'm still at the office at like 7 o'clock, and I emailed them back and said, you know what? It's going to be done when it's done. I can't go any harder than I'm going, right? I need to concentrate. So get off my back, basically. And this person responded with, oh, okay, I understand. And to me, I guess because I pay so much attention to body language that I can detect it immediately if someone's stressed, if they're overwhelmed, if they don't understand what I'm saying. But I feel that that skill is not given to very many people. So in meetings, I'm showing body language of I'm stressed, I'm frustrated, I'm not aware of what's going on, but I feel like nobody else picks it up. And then when you don't, to me it feels like lashing out. To them it's like, oh, that's normal. It's like, that's not normal at all. If someone told that to me, I would be like, oh my gosh, what am I doing wrong? How can I fix it? But I think that's more of the, like in my interviews, they'll say, what's your greatest skill? Or what's your greatest attribute? Or I don't know how they phrase it now. But I'll say, you know, programming, duh, because that's what I'm interviewing for. But also, I can take criticism very well. And I always get kind of a cockeyed look, like, that's an interesting thing to name. But then as it resolves in their brain, they really like it. You know, because that is a, it's rare. Because typically oh God, I don't want to have to tell Bill that he's screwing up again. He's going to fly off the handle and blame everybody and get upset. And for me, I encourage it. Like, I want to know because I realize that's the only thing that's lifted me to the level in my career that I am, is from people saying, you're doing this, you should probably do this. Like, when I worked as a consultant, that's how my writing's gotten so good. My communication on the phone. Even on the podcast, if I were to communicate the way I did before I started at the consulting firm, I didn't enunciate my words, I didn't open my mouth. It was just mumble. They would call me mumble, the mumble mouth. So we would call each other on the phones, and you would answer, and they would be like, "Hey, this is a client, this," and I would be like, "Oh, hello, Sean." They're like, "I can't understand what you're saying, dude. Like, you have to talk. Like, it don't. You sound retarded," and I don't mean that. I mean that in the most politically correct way possible.
Well, I'm certainly glad
I'm
that you
referencing a
clarified that.
90s vernacular of the word retarded, not saying anything bad about anyone else. So I sounded ignorant. And so, or like I don't know what I'm doing, or a mush mouth. But I learned all that from that criticism. Now, a lot of that was not, it was unsolicited, but I learned that, hey, this feels, ugh, I don't like the way it feels, but it, you know, it, the level of edification was high. Is that a correct use of that word? Okay. So that's from my life. So how have you been this week?
How have I been this week? Getting more done. Work is been crazy. Still getting ready for this test that I've got to take because my certification expires in December.
It's in a few weeks, right?
No, I have to schedule the
Oh,
test.
okay.
They give you a 3-month window in which to schedule it, and I have to schedule it. But the actual certification that I'm testing for expires in December. So I think I have till the end of October. Anyway, so I've got to study for that, so that's been taking some time along with just my regular workday.
Is it just like re-upping thing? Is it like stuff you already know that you already did or
No,
new?
some of it is stuff that I really need to think about. It's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of stuff. So I'm doing that. One of the things that I think a lot of people are needing is more sleep. I've been trying to get to bed earlier because I've noticed that when I do that, I'm just far more productive. And obviously, when you think about that, that just sounds so dumb. Oh yeah, but I see more and more people walking around with a Monster energy drink in their hand, and I'm thinking, it was never intended to be a substitute for sleep. And so,
And that's on a Tuesday. It's like,
yeah,
what are you pushing
that's
for?
right.
Like,
So, and you waste so much time just trying to gather your thoughts when you're tired. So I'm getting more sleep, and that's good. The writing, I think I told you. I don't even remember what I told you last week as far as where I was struggling, but I think I told you that I was having problems with it just being kind of disjointed. I had these little islands of it, of chapters and so forth. And
you said you were going to sew those or glue them together.
Glue them together, and I found a method that I'm using that I found online that really helped me to think about it, starting with the very basic. You know,
oh, the snowflake.
The snowflake method. Mm-hmm. And it's a little difficult at one point, so I'm having to add some things to it because I'm not completely happy with it. But it did get me to realize that start basic, you know, try to write the gist of your book in a sentence and then expand that to several sentences and so forth. And that was helpful. It really got me to thinking about it. I go back a little bit to something I said numerous episodes ago. I think one of the best benefits of everything has been just forcing me to be persevering. You know, just to be honest with you, I mean, there was, growing up, I didn't get a lot of encouragement to persevere. And
me
it wasn't
too.
It wasn't that I had...
From my dad.
Yeah, your dad
I'm just
was
kidding.
A total failure. I still remember some comments that were made to me. Oh, that's probably not your thing. Or I'm sure if you try something else, that'll be fine. Rather
wow.
than, why don't you just knuckle down and put your nose to the grindstone and work at it, because, you know, accomplishments come at a price, you know, some perspiration, some hard work and all that. And, you know, so I was kind of lazy. Actually, I was lazy.
But as a byproduct of that,
well,
being taught that,
and it,
that's okay.
And again, you can, but I want to be careful with this, because you can throw the blame on your parents or whatever else, but in the end, you still pay the price for not doing what you need to do. And so that's where you really need to end up, is forget about the blame game on anybody else. Just realize that you're in charge of your life, your decisions, and if you choose to cut things short because things get a little bit hard, you're going to pay the price for that.
Yeah.
So I've learned a lot over the course of my lifetime. I've gotten a lot better at it, but I realize that even as I'm writing this book, that I still have a ways to go at just staying with it. And in the course of, you know, learning anything, one of the things that happens to all of us is that it looked kind of straightforward, this thing that I'm going to do, and it didn't look all that, you know, I should be able to do that. Then you start to get into it. You wade into the water and you realize, holy smokes, it's bigger than I thought it was. There's a whole lot more to it, you know. It's kind of like how many of us criticize some people who are, for instance, actors, we say, I could do that. Oh, have you tried that? Have you taken some acting classes? You realize it's not so simple, you know. A lot of things that we look at it from a distance look easy, and then we start to get into it, and we realize, hey, there's a whole lot more to it than we thought. So in my case, with the writing of the book, I started to realize, ooh, I need to work on dialogue, or I need to work on, you know, like what I'm saying about having these disjointed chapters and pulling them all together, and character development and all these different types of things, which I'm seeing are really important. But what stands out to me is some things that I've read where people would say, hey, understand this is going to take time. So don't, you may start off thinking, well, I can write this and I should be done by the end of the year. Well, you'll have something by the end of the year. It may not be a product that you want to throw out there, but you'll have something. But just keep growing. Keep learning. Keep being vulnerable and open to criticism, to the fact that it's probably bigger than you think it is. And so just steadily, day by day, you know, continue to learn. And that's what's been happening. I've been reading stuff about how to develop different areas of my writing, and being okay with that. It's okay to, you know, I'm here, I want to be there, it's going to take some time, do some more reading, do some things to develop yourself, and, you know, you readjust some of your goals as far as what you're going to expect of yourself, because
you adjust them.
Yeah.
And is that what you said?
Yeah, adjust them. And that's okay. To be okay with that, and rather than saying, oh, darn, I'm not going to reach my goal. Well, let's understand something. Goal, once again, is...
Your goal was made with limited information.
Limited information, and it was only there to point you in the right direction. But as you get closer to it, you realize that you got more information now. Now you have to do some course corrections and readjust your goals based on reality.
Well, and the funny thing... I think I say that a lot. The thing that I noticed, now that I've thought about it, and now that I'm deep into this other thing at work. So, in software, to paint a picture that relates perfectly with the snowflake method, right? You do the five-star point, then you get into the granularity of it, or the minutia of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, in software... you're able to, you can send an email. Let's take Gmail, for instance, right? You log into your Gmail account. You send an email to someone that you indicate, to Ryan, from Wayne, here's a letter, go, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's one abstraction of it. An abstraction is taking something complicated and making it more basic, right? So if you had to code in the exact machine learning, the machine language that it would take to send that, and then send that that machine language to the to your server, from your computer to the server in the cloud or whatever, you would never send an email, right? Because
right.
the abstraction isn't enough where it's usable. Whereas if it's too abstracted, then it only lets you send emails like, hi, or let's go to lunch, but it doesn't let you say anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So when in the project that I'm dealing with, I'm having to exist in multiple dimensions simultaneously. So at the ground level of how this does to this at a very detailed step-by-step process, and then also at the abstraction that calls that, but then having to not stumble over yourself and not call something, or is this the best choice for that? So spending some time, I think that, and correct me if I'm wrong, in my world, I do start with the 5-point star, like the gist of it, the gist of the library, I stub it out, I want to create this, delete this, modify this, and then I don't get into what that is. Create what? Create a database, create an instance, create a object, create a... doesn't matter. Just to get an idea, you know. But in contrary to what you're saying about writing, that's more of like an outline, which you've been advised kind of not to do. But maybe we could say, for the sake of argument, it's a synopsis.
Mm-hmm.
So then learning that you still have to delve in and do some of that deep work, but sometimes it is refreshing to step out and look at the higher level, just to kind of, because I think you kind of go crazy after a while.
You have to feel like you're making progress, and if you don't step back once in a while, sometimes you're afraid to step back because you'll step back and you're not going to see anything, or you'll see no progress and you'll say, what in the world am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be able to step back, just like if you were out, you know, gardening and you're deep into the soil and pulling weeds and everything else, and every once in a while you stand back and you look at it and you say, wow, that looks pretty good. You want to be able to do that with whatever effort that you're expending,
mm-hmm.
so that it justifies I am making progress.
Yes.
And,
well, so, and giving yourself the latitude to, I guess what I'm trying to say is, feel the freedom to, I can work on dialogue today, but then tomorrow I may want to work on the relationships. As long as you're abstracting or jumping up that level of abstraction to the 5-point star to say, okay, let's take a, I have to come up from the deep dive. So at work I do a lot of deep diving, not literally, but like in code, like I'm going to learn this technology all the way to the bottom. And then I'm trying to talk to people about it, but I'm way down here, and then I realize, like, no one knows what I'm talking about, so I have to bring it all the way to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
But then for myself, in an overview of the project, I have to come to the surface to kind of gauge, okay, I know you're working on the dialogue, right? But what if you come to the top and you're like, oh, my book's about deaf people. Like, there is no dialogue. You know what I'm saying? You know, taking into account, like, oh, that doesn't really apply because of my synopsis or whatever. So it's very interesting, the correlations between that and software.
Well, and one of the things that, just to give you an idea where I think I've been getting ahead of myself a little bit, my next-door neighbor was talking to me about doing character profiles, and I really haven't spent enough time doing that. And as I've started doing that now, and what I've begun to realize is that how do you know how somebody's going to react or talk or what their character type is capable of doing unless you create that profile? Mm-hmm. Really, essentially, you know, you can talk about what you would do or what you would say. I mean, because we live in our own skin and we, you know, we know what we would, how we would respond to certain things. But if you're writing a book and you've got these characters that aren't you, they're somebody else, you essentially have to be able to climb into their minds, into their skin, and to know, you know, more about how they would respond to different things, what they would do. Would they kill this person, or would they shrink away from a fight? Would mm-hmm. they be shy? Would they be bold? Would they, would this type of thing bother them or not, you know?
That's interesting, because it reminds me a lot of, so in essence, like, you're becoming the actor. Mm-hmm. Like, in acting, we learned a lot of, not character development, because it's already been developed for us, but we were stressed on actioning your text, right? So don't just read your lines. Like, what is the verb? And you're like, well, I don't understand. I'm saying, I'm going to the store. What are you doing? What is your verb? Are you fighting? If you're fighting, then you're angrily, not an adverb, but you can make it a, I'm angering, my verb is not an adjective, but like I'm leaving, or I'm coming home, or I'm, what am I doing? How do I action that? Because intrinsically, we understand verbs. Like, I'm leaving. Well, you understand a certain realm of activities or emotions that may be associated with that. I'm dying. I'm living. I'm laughing. So we were taught you have to action that text, and then you the more you action it, the more you determine what verb would this character choose for this. You experience more of how that, and it kind of morphs that character. So like, we would have a character, and it was for Shakespeare when we were doing, when I was in that, I did my theater class. It was, after you action your text and you're looking at your character, you're evaluating what drives this character. Not only that, how do you action that on the stage? Like, where do you lead from, right? You have a perverted old man. He may lead from his hips, right? Because he's driven by like a sexual preference or a sexual like mm-hmm. perversion. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're more of a high-minded, arrogant person, you may lead from your chest. Like, you're very pompous. Or if you're a very intellectual person, or maybe like a very docile person, maybe you'll lead with your head, like you're peeking and, oh, I'm scared. But all those things are choices that the actor has to make. So that's mm-hmm. very interesting that you're saying that, and like you said, that does take time.
Well, and you think about it, like in a scene in a book where there's something happening that is, everyone would agree, was a very fearful type of a setting. Mm-hmm. Each character will respond to it a little differently based on who they are, and so their dialogue, their actions, and everything else needs to come forth from that mm-hmm. their character. And if you don't understand that character well mm-hmm. enough, you're gonna mess that up. And so,
well, in building that, like in your climactic scenes or your drama scenes, we were always told, if you get very close on stage, if you're building this animosity or this whatever, you build up an emotion and it has to be released. Mm-hmm. And it can't stay tight forever, right? So you'll see actors that, I'm angry, so I'm going to yell at the top of my lungs for 5 minutes instead of letting that set and from your bowels like slowly come up and erupt and become violent. Whereas you have two characters on stage will enter and be close to each other. They would either have to hit each other or kiss each other, but that would relieve the tension. So it's just an interesting dynamic. In some ways, you don't have any type of blocking that you do in a script where you actually have to create where the characters are in the physical space, how they're reacting, and also be the actor for every character. I mean, that's why if you wanted to write for a soap opera, I guess you would go crazy because you're trying to envision, but they're not always written that well. But that's interesting. But like you said, I think the main point that you said is it takes time and allowing yourself to really understand and be okay with that.
And you're still writing all the while, by the way. This is not something that you're just reading about writing. Everybody that you read says on the, the art of writing says, just keep writing, keep writing, keep writing. And that's a good thing. You need to keep writing, but as you're learning, you incorporate some of those things into it. So I've got to be careful that I'm just not reading about writing, but I'm continuing to write. So I need to do that as well. So it just continues to be a challenge, but I'm just in a hopefully not too proud way, proud of myself that I'm sticking with it.
As you should be. It's
So,
hard. It's been a long process.
yeah, it is. It
So
really
it's
is.
gluing, is it starting to
It's
coalesce?
starting to come together, but I realize why I haven't done this up until now, because it is difficult, and unless you find a way to keep yourself at it, you can see how you can find yourself quitting and not continue with something and having this, long bunch of things strewn behind you of things that you started that you never finished, and you never really stop long enough to analyze, well, the reason I quit is because it got hard, or, well, and you give excuses like I got distracted. No, it got hard, and you didn't like having to stick with it, so you quit.
Or God forbid you end it early,
Well,
which is I've experienced some of that. You see some movies that are like that. So then I guess for next week then, what are you thinking?
I still need to do some rewriting as I've been doing this, what I call the snowflake method here. It is a legitimate thing, and I can't remember the guy's name who did it. But he did give me some good ideas about how to connect the dots between, from beginning to end. And so I still need to keep working at that. I have not achieved that yet. I'm still working on it. I think I've had to make some changes in because of doing his method
In your
that
mindset or in the
well,
writing?
in the actual book, I've changed some chapters. I flipped some chapters around because I thought, wow, this makes so much more sense to have this the first chapter and that the second chapter instead of vice versa and whatever.
Just like you have like the building blocks.
Yeah, so evidently something in my mind is beginning to see some continuity, but I had to make some changes in order for that to happen. So I'm still going to work on that. I'm still going to work on, and I'm definitely going to finish the character profiles because the urgency is there. I'm realizing how important it is that I really do the character profiles so that it's more easy for me to climb into their minds. And like I said, fearful moments, joyful moments, funny moments. That I know how those characters are going to respond. So,
Well, like you told me before, your mind is working on it all the time.
it is, and so that's a good thing. And the other thing is that we noticed as well, life goes on. It's not like you can devote untold hours to do this. I have lots of things going on in my life, so I spent all day Saturday on this, by the way. Working on this,
Really?
yeah.
So
So,
like 8 hours
yeah,
or
at
like
least
six
8 hours
hours?
on it,
Wow.
and I was amazed at how long it took. And I don't feel like I got a lot done in that 8 hours, but it was just because I'm not being realistic about what to expect.
Did it feel exhausting or did it feel like it just
It
passed really fast?
was eye-opening. It was difficult. Trying to follow this method and trying to put some continuity into it. It was hard. It was very hard.
Wow.
So,
How many pages do you have? You don't
I don't know.
know?
I couldn't
Just
tell you.
one huge long document. You're backing it up, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyway, that's where I'm at.
That's awesome. So next week I will I have another meeting with the partners. Then work. So trying to navigate that space effectively and trying to, like, it's very, I'm under a lot of stress and I'm trying to evaluate, like, what can I learn from this situation? And then also, I would say for the system that I'm working on, delving into something that I've avoided since day one, because it's very scary and I don't know how to do it. So I'm going to delve headfirst into that, and hopefully, as all things in life, it will show itself to be not as formidable as an adversary as I thought.
Okay.
So, but that's it for me.
Okay. We'll see you later.
All right, bye.